This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Jeremiah. Today on Sandy Adams Radio, Pastor Sandy will begin in Jeremiah chapter 39 on this edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
For 20 years, the kings of Judah had been a thorn in Nebuchadnezzar's side. Zedekiah was the final straw. And so he punishes him in a cruel and inhumane way. Nebuchadnezzar kills the king's sons before his very eyes. He makes Zedekiah watch the execution of his own sons. Then he plucks out Zedekiah's own eyes with a hot poker so that the last lingering vision in the mind of Zedekiah is the execution of his own sons. How's that for some severe punishment? And it's interesting, this unravels two seemingly contradictory prophecies that we get earlier, but we can't make sense of them until we find out what happened. Back in Jeremiah chapter 34, verse 2, Zedekiah was warned that he would see Nebuchadnezzar eye to eye, face to face. Whereas in Ezekiel 12, verse 13, God says of Zedekiah, "I will bring him to Babylon, yet he shall not see it." So how do you reconcile that? Well, here's the answer. Zedekiah saw Nebuchadnezzar eye to eye, face to face at his headquarters in Riblah. But by the time he got to Babylon, he was blind. His eyes had been poked out. Verse 8. "And the Chaldeans burned the king's house," that is the royal palace of Jerusalem, "and the houses of the people with fire, and broke down the walls of Jerusalem. Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive to Babylon the remnant of the people who remained in the city, and those who defected to him with the rest of the people who remained." He'd already deported some of the Jews to Babylon. You remember Daniel and his three friends, Ezekiel and others. But now the rest of the people are carted off in chains and made exiles in Babylon. "But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left in the land of Judah the poor people who had nothing and gave them vineyards and fields at the same time." Now Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, "Take him and look after him, and do him no harm, but do to him just as he says to you." Oh, it's fascinating here to me that Nebuchadnezzar knew of Jeremiah and the things that Jeremiah had been preaching within the city. I'm sure that Daniel also gave him some information, as well as the spies that had been sent in. They had heard him preach to the people, defect, surrender to the Babylonians. Perhaps Daniel had showed the king Jeremiah's own writings, where he had called Nebuchadnezzar servant of Yahweh. However it happened, Nebuchadnezzar had great respect for Jeremiah, recognized him as an ally, and treated him kindly. In reality, though, Jeremiah wasn't a friend of Babylon or to anyone other than God. In fact, in chapters 50 and 51, Jeremiah is going to utter some scorching judgments against Babylon. Jeremiah was on no one's side but God's side. It is, though, encouraging to see him finally rewarded with some mercy for his many, many years of faithfulness to God. And so Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, sent Nebushaban, Rabsaris, Nergal-Sharezer, Rabmag, that old Rabmag, and all the king of Babylon's chief officers. Then they sent someone to take Jeremiah from the court of the prison and committed him to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, that he should take him home so he dwelt among the people. Think about it. After 40 years of service to God, difficult service, sacrificial service, after 40 years, after a lifetime of sacrificial service to God, Jeremiah finally gets to go home. Meanwhile, the word of the Lord had come to Jeremiah while he was shut up in the court of the prison, saying, "Go and speak to Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, saying, 'Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring my words upon this city for adversity and not for good, and they shall be performed in that day before you, but I will deliver you in that day, says the Lord.' And you shall not be given into the hand of the men of whom you are afraid. For I will surely deliver you, and you shall not fall by the sword, but your life shall be as a prize to you, because you have put your trust in me, says the Lord. And so Jeremiah is thinking about his old friend. He doesn't forget the guy who helped him. And so God gives him a word for Ebed-Melech. He goes to his friend, and it's great to see that Ebed-Melech was also rewarded for his faithfulness to God as well. Chapter 40. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord after Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had let him go from Ramah, when he had taken him bound in chains among all who were carried away captive from Jerusalem and Judah, who were carried away captive to Babylon. Now this doesn't make sense. In chapter 39, after he was rescued from the king's prison, Jeremiah was set free. He went home. So why is he now bound in chains, being taken off into exile with the other Jews? There is an emotional, very emotional, extra-biblical story that was told year after year by the Jewish rabbis. It went like this, that when Jeremiah saw his fellow Jews shackled and chained and being taken away, he voluntarily chained himself to them in order to show God's love for them. He was bound to these Jews spiritually for 40 years. He had suffered for them, and he would continue to do so even as they were being taken into exile. Now, we don't know if that was true, but it does seem to convey the heart of Jeremiah, the heart that we've seen in action over and over again, that he loved the Jews so much that he actually chained themselves to them until he was forced to stay and remain. And by the way, this is the kind of love that voluntarily bound Jesus to the cross. Jesus suffered with us and ultimately for us. Jesus could have gone home without dying on the cross, but he voluntarily nailed himself to that cross so that you and I could be saved. And then verse 2 tells us, and the captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said to him, the Lord your God has pronounced this doom on this place. Now the Lord has brought it and has done just as he said. Because you people have sinned against the Lord and not obeyed his voice, therefore this thing has come upon you. Wow, out of the mouth of a pagan Babylonian, Jeremiah is reminded of the truth. You know, it's possible due to the influence of Daniel and Ezekiel, the Babylonians may have had a better grasp of God's truth and of what was really going on than the Jews who were in Jerusalem at the time. Well, the captain goes on to say, and now look, I free you this day from the chains that were on your hand. If it seems good to you to come with me to Babylon, come, and I will look after you. But if it seems wrong for you to come with me to Babylon, remain here. See, all the land is before you. Wherever it seems good and convenient for you to go, go there. Now, while Jeremiah had not yet gone back, Nebuzaradan said, go back to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, whom the king of Babylon has made governor over the cities of Judah, and dwell with him among the people, or go wherever it seems convenient for you to go. So the captain of the guard gave him rations and a gift and let him go. This is an incredible kindness. In essence, the Babylonians are setting Jeremiah up with a good life. They're kind of saying, hey, you know, we owe you one. You stood for us. You kept telling the Jews to surrender to the Babylonians. We're going to take care of you now. You can move to Babylon if you like. You can stay here in Judah. You can take any parcel that you want. All options are open for you, Jeremiah. We want the rest of your days to be prosperous and for you to live well. But notice what he does. Oh, my. Then Jeremiah went to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah, and dwelt with him among the people who were left in the land. He chooses to stay with the people. Remember, the poorest of the people. Jeremiah could have been hobnobbing with the Babylonian jet set. He could have moved into a villa on the Euphrates River, just as it was said of Moses, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. And this was Jeremiah's heart. He cared more about loyalty than luxury. He cared more about God's people than about popular people. Verse 7, and when all the captains of the armies who were in the fields, they and their men heard that the king of Babylon had made Gedaliah the son of Ahikam governor in the land and had committed to him men, women, children, and the poorest of the land who had not been carried away captive to Babylon, then they came to Gedaliah at Mizpah. Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, Johanan, and Jonathan, the sons of Kareah, Seraiah, the son of Tahumeth, the sons of Ephiah, the Netophite, and Jezaniah, the son of Makathite. Rabmag somewhere. They and their men. Maybe he back in Babylon. Apparently, these men were a paramilitary group who'd been hiding while the city was being besieged. They may have been waging a guerrilla war against the Babylonians. But now they come out of hiding and they join Gedaliah, the new governor. You know, Judah is now a Babylonian province. There's no longer a king. Nebuchadnezzar has set up a governor now, a Jew named Gedaliah. His capital is Mizpah, which was about 8 miles north of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is now in ashes and in rubble. And Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, took an oath before them and their men, saying, do not be afraid to serve the Chaldeans, the Babylonians. Dwell in the land and serve the king of Babylon, and it shall be well with you. As for me, I will indeed dwell at Mizpah and serve the Chaldeans who come to us. But you gather wine and summer fruit and oil, put them in your vessels and dwell in your cities that you have taken. Likewise, when all the Jews who were in Moab among the Ammonites in Edom and who were in all the countries heard that the king of Babylon had left a remnant of Judah and that he had set over them Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, then all the Jews returned out of all the places where they had been driven and came to the land of Judah to Gedaliah at Mizpah and gathered wine and summer fruit in abundance. Notice the Jews who had fled Judah and Jerusalem and had become refugees in the surrounding areas, now that the Babylonian invasion is over, they return and they come back to Jerusalem. They come back to the land of Judah. This means that three groups now occupy the land. First, the poor. Second, these guerrilla fighters. And now third, the refugees who had fled and are now returning. Verse 13. Moreover, Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces that were in the fields came to Gedaliah at Mizpah and said to him, do you certainly know that Balas, the king of the Ammonites, has sent Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, to murder you? But Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, did not believe them. Now, the Ammonites and the Israelites have a long, long history of hostility. This king Balas didn't want the Jews to refortify and reassemble in the land. And so he hires a hitman named Ishmael to come and to assassinate the new governor, Gedaliah. Or so says this Johanan. Then Johanan, the son of Kareah, spoke secretly to Gedaliah in Mizpah, saying, let me go, please, and I will kill Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, and no one will know it. Why should he murder you so that all the Jews who are gathered to you would be scattered and the remnant in Judah perish? You see, Johanan knows that if Governor Gedaliah gets assassinated, Nebuchadnezzar back in Babylon, he's just going to be fed up with this whole region, with the rebellion that's going on, and he's going to crush the Jews once and for all, leaving the land to the foreigners. So he says, why don't you let me take out Ishmael? We'll solve the problem right now. But Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, said to Johanan, the son of Kareah, you shall not do this thing, for you speak falsely concerning Ishmael. Now, Gedaliah seems to have been a good man, but we're going to soon discover he was a gullible man, because Johanan was right. Ishmael did want to kill him. Chapter 41 tells us. Now, it came to pass in the 7th month that Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama, of the royal family and of the officers of the king, came with 10 men to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, at Mizpah. And there they ate bread together in Mizpah. In other words, they feigned fellowship. Oh, let's eat a meal together. Of course, eating in those days spoke of oneness and loyalty and trust. And yet, notice what is said about this Ishmael. Notice, He was of the royal family. Notice that. This Ishmael was an heir to the throne of David. He was in line to be king. He had a right to the throne. Gedaliah was just a governor who had been appointed by a pagan, no less. I imagine there was some jealousy brewing in this man's heart. Then Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, and the 10 men who were with him, arose and struck Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, with the sword, and killed him whom the king of Babylon had made governor over the land. Ishmael also struck down all the Jews who were with him, that is, with Gedaliah at Mizpah, and the Chaldeans who were found there, the men of war. And it happened on the second day after he had killed Gedaliah, when as yet no one knew it, apparently the news cycle was a bit slower in those days, that certain men came from Shechem, from Shiloh, and from Samaria, 80 men with their beards shaved and their clothes torn, having cut themselves with offerings and incense in their hand to bring them to the house of the Lord. Now these Samaritans, these Shechemites, they come down from the center of the country, from the north, and they want to visit the site of the former temple in Jerusalem. They come to mourn its destruction. That's why they've shaved their beards. They've cut themselves. They've torn their clothes. They've rent their garments. They come to mourn the loss of the temple. Remember, the fall of the temple occurred on the ninth day of the month of Ab in 586 BC. And it's interesting, the ninth of Ab is still, to this very day, a day of mourning for the Jews. It's one of the great ironies of history that when the Romans come and destroy the rebuilt temple in 70 AD, guess what day the temple falls? Same day, the ninth of Ab. Now it's interesting, just months after the temple's destruction, its ruins were considered sacred. That's why they come to the site of the temple, the ruins of the temple. It's considered sacred. And it's interesting, this is the case today among the Jews. In 70 AD, the Romans demolished a rebuilt temple, and all that is left to this day is one retaining wall. It's not even part of the temple. It was just part of the retaining wall that surrounded the temple. Yet, this wall, today it's called the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall, attracts pilgrims from all over the world. People come to the Wailing Wall to pray to the God of Israel. And this was the desire of these Shechemites from Shiloh. They had come to the ruins to pray and to mourn the loss of their temple. Now Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, went out from Mizpah to meet them, weeping as he went along. And it happened as he met them that he said to them, "Come to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam." And he's just killed him. So it was when they came into the midst of the city that Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, killed them and cast them into the midst of a pit, he and the men who were with him. This guy's ruthless. He's brutal. Ishmael's crew killed the men from Samaria to cover up the assassination of Gedaliah. But 10 men were found among them who said to Ishmael, "Do not kill us, for we have treasures of wheat, barley, oil, and honey in the field." So he desisted and did not kill them among their brethren. It was customary on a trip like this one to bring supplies for the return trip home. And so these 10 men of Shechem, they used the groceries they've brought to barter for their lives. Verse 9. Now the pit into which Ishmael had cast all the dead bodies of the men whom he had slain because of Gedaliah was the same one Asa the king had made for fear of Baasha, king of Israel. Ishmael the son of Nethaniah filled it with the slain, a mass grave. Then Ishmael carried away captive all the rest of the people who were in Mizpah, the king's daughters and all the people who remained in Mizpah, who Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had committed to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, and Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, carried them away captive and departed to go over to the Ammonites. And it could be that the prophet Jeremiah was among this entourage that was taken by Ishmael. He had been there with Gedaliah in Mizpah. But when Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces that were with him heard of all the evil that Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, had done. Now when they heard, I'll bet you the first thing he thought was, "Why didn't you let me take care of this guy earlier?" Because he knew But now they took all the men and went to fight with Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah. And they found him by the great pool that is in Gibeon. And so it was when all the people who were with Ishmael saw Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces who were with him, that they were glad. Jeremiah and all these other Jews, they rejoiced. Deliverance has now come by the hand of Johanan. Again, Johanan had earlier warned Gedaliah of Ishmael's plan, but Gedaliah didn't believe him. And it cost him his life. Gedaliah was a good man, but he was a gullible man. You see, not everyone has good intentions. You know, there's one biblical truth that we know about every human being, and that is that they're born a sinner and that they're capable of deception. When you go to buy a used car, remember that. When you interact with somebody on the phone, remember that. I hate to say it. We all would like to be trusting of everyone, but don't be gullible. People are sinners. People are capable of deception. We need to realize that. You remember in Matthew chapter 10, verse 16, Jesus said, "Be wise as serpents and harmless as doves." Be wise as serpents. You know, a snake would seem to be at a horrible disadvantage. How would you like to crawl on your belly all the time? But he lays low. It has some street smarts. Well, snakes know how to survive. And doves, they're harmless. That means they can avoid unnecessary conflict. Usually hostility is, you know, rewarded with more hostility, but a dove is harmless. It kind of keeps a low profile too. You know, people leave the doves alone. What are they going to harm? Jesus is saying that we need to be smart in our interactions with evil men. Gedaliah's lack of discernment, his gullibility, became his death sentence. And here Johanan tries to clean up the damage. Then all the people whom Ishmael had carried away captive from Mizpah turned around and came back and went to Johanan, the son of Kareah. But Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, escaped from Johanan with 8 men and went to the Ammonites. Then Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces that were with him took from Mizpah all the rest of the people whom he had recovered from Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, after he had murdered Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the mighty men of war and the women and the children and the eunuchs whom he had brought back from Gibeon. And they departed and dwelt in the habitation of Chinnim, which is near Bethlehem, as they were on their way to Egypt because of the Chaldeans, for they were afraid of them because Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, had murdered Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, who the king of Babylon had made governor in the land. And notice that phrase, on their way to Egypt. Because the Jews now feared a reprisal from Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian army. Hey, I mean, the governor who Nebuchadnezzar had appointed is now dead. And so they're afraid of a reprisal. And so they plan to flee to Egypt. And here is the irony of all ironies. 860 years earlier, God had delivered these people out of where? Out of Egypt. And now the Jews are going right back from where they started. They're on their way to Egypt. And here's the lesson for us. Despite all that God does for you, despite all that God does in you, if you and I don't continue in our faith, we can end up right back in the bondage from which we've escaped. And so, let's not just have faith, but let's continue in our faith.
Thank you for listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. He's been camped out in 2 Old Testament books. Both books are likely written by the prophet Jeremiah. And as a prophet, he would have had a message from God to give to a nation in need. And isn't that just like what we need sometimes? A word from our Heavenly Father. If you enjoyed today's message and would like to hear more like it, visit sandyadams.org. There you'll find a library of Pastor Sandy's messages arranged by title. You don't want to miss this opportunity to listen to these teachings. While you're at sandyadams.org, take some time to look around. You can even get the lowdown on what's happening here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Do you have something you need prayer for? We'd be honored to intercede in prayer on your behalf. You can call us at 770-736-2828. Once again, that's 770-736-2828. Remember, nothing's too small or too big for God to handle. If you're in the area, we invite you to check us out. We gather every Sunday morning at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. We guarantee this will be time well spent. Pastor Sandy isn't done teaching in this series, so be sure to make plans to join us again right here on Sandy Adams Radio.